and this is Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts. On today's show, we feature The Intelligent Design of Jenny Chow by Roland Jones at Portland Center Stage. We'll talk with the lead actresses here in the studio. They star in this inventive and moving production. And in the second part of the show, we'll hear Damali Ayo's street performance as she panhandles for reparations in Living Flag. This is Stage and Studio. I'm Dime Roberts. With me in the KBOO studio are actors Soojin Kim. Good morning.
Good morning.
And Kayling Chung. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
And they both just opened the Portland Center Stage production of The Intelligent Design of Jenny Chow by Roland Jones. Welcome to Stage and Studio. I was really looking forward to this because just on the description of the play, it's about an Asian American adoptee who is agoraphobic and can't leave the house and is also a genius and a techno geek, and she builds a robot. You know, I mean, how can you not go to something like that?
It's crazy.
So I went to last Saturday night's performance, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I was entranced. And, you know, it really is a different kind of production, and there are different kind of roles, too, for everybody. I mean, everybody had a great role on there.
Yes.
But you're on the stage, you, Soojin, are on the stage like every single scene, aren't you? Every single
one
moment.
Page when I'm not
you
on
don't
that
get a bathroom break or anything except for intermission.
Got to go before and after.
See, it's good discipline being an actor, too. So it's a good workout for you.
It's a tremendous workout. It's more difficult than I imagined it would be, even going into it, knowing what it was.
Well, and for you, because, Kayling, you play the robot, and you get a different kind of a workout, because it's a very physical role.
It is. I spend the first part of Act 1 warming up and getting into gear and whatnot, so it's a definitely different kind of marathon than what Soojin
does. You have a different kind of a discipline, is to keep in the show, even though you're not on stage, and then you get all physical.
Yes.
Then you come on like gangbusters. So it's interesting to me. I mean, it was just a breathtaking production. I think these are perhaps the best roles for young Asian American actresses out there today for the stage. What do you think about that?
Certainly the most visible of them, and they are pretty amazing roles. I think it's remarkable that it was written by a white man.
I know. And he thinks it's remarkable he wrote it, too. And I was reading about him, and it's like, I can't believe I wrote this, you know? And it's a play that we all wish we had written, because it just has so many layers to it. The roles are great, but everybody just goes through a lot of different changes and paces. So when you both read this play, how did you, like, come upon it? Was it, like, the audition call, and you started reading it before you went to the auditions?
I read a copy of it a long, long time ago, maybe a year and a half ago, and I was just blown away. It's so funny. It's hilarious. The characters are unforgettable, unique, indelible, and the journey that this girl goes on is tremendous. And it wasn't until maybe, you know, a year and a half later that I actually went in for this audition and got to really get my, you know, start getting my fingers into it, sink my teeth into it.
Yeah. Kayling, how did you come upon this?
Mine is a little different. I actually have auditioned for the play a couple times before this production without having read the script. And so I was like, what is this play about? I don't understand this. And finally, for this time around, I actually got to read the script, and I was like, wow, this play is really beautiful, and there's some exciting parts in it, like you said. And that's how I came upon it, and it's just been great ever since.
Now, where are you both based here? Are you based in New York, both of you?
Yes.
Okay. So you probably have read for this quite a few times, like you said.
Yeah.
Yes. And I'm glad you were able to get this production. This is, I don't want to be too effusive, but I really enjoyed it. And sometimes it's really hard to go to the theater and really just be entranced like that, from the visual effects to the acting to the script, but everything just worked.
Yeah, I
you know, it
really
just worked.
Happy marriage between the playwright and the director, who happened to be really good friends.
So they were able to collaborate even more for this production.
Yeah, she was in constant phone contact with him, and it was great to have his input into it, even though he wasn't here physically for most of the process.
Well, the play, The Intelligent Design of Jenny Chow, is about Jennifer Marcus, who you play, Soo-jin.
Mm-hmm.
And she's an adoptee in a dysfunctional family, which, you know, you say dysfunctional, but actually they're kind of normal.
For
a lot of families,
true.
You know, it's like the norm is dysfunction. And she suffers from obsessive compulsive disorder, and she can't leave the house. And one day, you know, she finds the name of her birth mother in China, but she can't leave the house. So she builds the robot, which is Yu Keiling, and names her Jenny Chow to visit her mother. I mean, just all of those elements are so unusual. And the play brings up so many issues. Let's start first with just from the adoptee perspective.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what, you know, I would think a lot of adoptees kind of, you know, I know they're not agoraphobic or obsessive compulsive,
right.
but they could relate to this dilemma of, it isn't just that she can't leave the house, it's like, does she really want to find that part of herself, or her birth mother?
I think she really does, but it is a really impulsive decision. As much as she's looked into it, she hasn't thought it through on an emotional basis. She's one of those people who's so smart that she's like years beyond her age in so many ways, but emotionally, she's a lot younger than she really is in years. And when she actually gets to meet her mother without giving it away, it's very different from what she had imagined, partly because she hadn't really imagined what it would be like.
I think that's probably something that every adoptee can relate to, because it would be different from what you would imagined, or you might be too afraid to imagine what it would really be like. And that is a very emotional and poignant scene. Like I said, I was in tears over it. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm Dee Mae Roberts. My guests are Soo-jin Kim and Keiling Chung, and they're currently starring in the production of The Intelligent Design of Jenny Chow at Portland Center Stage, and that runs through March 5th. And why do you think Jennifer, I mean, she's a genius, but what do you think keeps her, you know, from fully entering life? I mean, yes, she has obsessive compulsive disorder, but what's behind that?
I think I did some reading about child geniuses. I think because they develop differently, they don't really relate to people their age. She has one friend who is her age that she loves and adores, but she can't really relate to a lot of people. She can't relate to her parents on a lot of levels, partly because she's an adoptee and partly because she's so smart. They don't know what to do with her. Her schoolmates probably didn't know what to do with her or make of her. I think she's isolated, and she's found a comfort in her isolation.
Which is herself.
Right.
And relating to other people through the technology.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because it's safe, and she's under control.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's so many levels to this. And then she builds Jenny Chow, and I want to get to the quote-unquote robot, who seems to me to, you know, often robots are portrayed as more human, right, than the actual person who built them. But she's also, to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, more traditionally, you know, Asian in that sense, too, because she's the filial daughter. I mean, I just read so many levels to her. Tell us about the robot and what she goes through.
Well, I think, like what Soo-jin says in the end, like what Jennifer Marcus has said at the end, the robot is sort of the ideal, like you said, the ideal daughter, the ideal girl, the ideal everything. And she's just so fearless because there's, you know, it's like a newborn baby where there's nothing to inhibit her. And she can just go into the world believing in herself, and not like, you know, with us growing up, we have all these things like going through like middle school and, you know, whatever, and we just get all inhibited and everything else. And the robot is just fearless. And it's just great playing up this the robot, because you're just so confident. And yet it's not an arrogance. It's just you really believe in yourself, and you really believe in your maker, and you believe in the world, and the world is beautiful, and that you could do anything.
Well, she has no fear, but she has no resistance to anything. She's just out there living in the world, the complete opposite of Jennifer Marcus, because she, you know, she just says what she says, and she is who she is,
and she does what she does,
which some of it is kind of supernatural, and I don't want to give it away, but that was one of where the visual effects really came in, and your physicality came in, where there's a scene that will astound the audience, because I'm not going to say it, but she just does something so astonishing that you go, wow, how'd they do this?
Right.
It was really hilarious, but it was so much fun, too. Now, you have a little scene here, not a lot, but just to give a sense of the differences between Jennifer Marcus and Jenny Chow, what What is the scene? When do you actually do the scene in the play?
It is actually right before Jennifer Marcus sends Jenny to meet her birth mother for her. And it's just the final preparations and the send-off.
And so she's sort of giving her some coaching, some training here?
Some final tips and sort of a, in her own way, a kiss goodbye, come home safe kind of a moment. Do you know what this is?
It is red and white and yellow.
It's a scarf.
It is a scarf. I like scarf.
Here, you wear it around your neck. Look. Last time you saw your mother, she left this with you. It's very special to her. She asked for it back. That's why you're going tonight, to give Su Young something she lost a long time ago.
Oh, very special. Okay. It feels nice on my fingers.
Yeah, it does. Are you ready? Are you excited?
I am Jenny Chow. I'm very excited.
In Mandarin.
我是周珍妮,我非常兴奋。
I hope that's right. All right, be good.
很好.
Very
great.
Good, very
that's
good. Great. So she even speaks Chinese.
Yeah, perfectly.
Perfectly, yes. So how do you go about playing a robot? What was your process? Looking up pictures, and that helps me a lot, and just... I think just being on my feet and just doing it, that helps a lot. And with Kim's guidance, we did a lot of movement work in the beginning of rehearsal, and that helped me out a lot. And at one point, you know, you just become it, and that's what my process is. But like I said, looking at pictures and...
Did you do some research? Because there are some robots being built in Japan.
Yes, and they look so real.
Human.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
It's crazy. I've seen those pictures. Yeah. And the video, too.
Yes.
It's amazing.
And you know, we were looking at those pictures, and they all have little cheerleading training outfits, and that's why I wear it in the show, because they're in training.
Right.
And it's just, they look so real. They put them next to real people, and you can hardly tell that they're fake.
Yeah, I was astonished to read about that. You're listening to Stage and Studio. I'm D. May Roberts. My guests are Su Jean Kim and Kayling Chung, and they are currently starring in the production of The Intelligent Design of Jenny Chow at Portland Center Stage. The show just opened, and it runs through March 5th. Tickets are $15 to $56. This year, every seat in the second balcony, which actually is a pretty good place to be. I like the second balcony, is $20, and it's $15 for everyone under 30 to, you know, sort of encourage the younger crowd to see this, which I believe that, you know, any age would love this play. I highly recommend it. For ticket info, call 503-274-6588. That's 274-6588. Or go to their website at pcs.org. And we have a pair of tickets to offer to the third caller at 503-231-8032. Now, in the moments remaining, I just wanted to find out more about who you are. Now, we've talked about your characters. We've talked about the play, The Intelligent Design of Jenny Chow. What made each of you decide to become actors? Because that's not necessarily a traditional thing in Asian American families.
Not at all.
They're usually worried, like, you're not going to make any money, you know?
Okay, yeah. They still are. They still,
that doesn't
still
go away.
Away.
That's
yeah.
a big worry.
Yeah. I always liken that, you know, choosing acting as a profession is to, you know, just how do you know what your favorite color is? You just know. It's like coming home, and you finally feel right, like you're in the right place. And I actually tried very hard not to be an actor for so long because my parents were so
what they want you to
worried
be?
About it. Lawyer, or doctor.
Doctor, lawyer, engineer.
Something that
computer.
Makes money.
Computer science.
How about you, Kina?
I stumbled upon it in high school. I took a choir class, and I started singing, and so I started doing musical theater in high school. And when I went to college, I decided not to major in it because, of course, the family and, you know, the need to make money and whatnot. But I always found myself across the bridge at UC Irvine, which is where the drama department was. So I finally just changed my major.
You grew up in LA?
In
area
Southern California,
yeah.
Yes. And after college, I realized that if I want to do this as a career and actually have make a living out of it, that I should go back to school. And that was when I became really serious about it.
You both trained. You both went to school
mm-hmm.
and studied there.
Mm-hmm.
When you bring up musical theater, what kind of roles did you have? I mean, did they consider, you know, you for some of the lead roles?
Yeah, I was really blessed at some places, and they would give me lead roles. But, you know, other places I was in the ensemble. It just depends. But I think, you know, theater is becoming more and more forgiving about race and whatnot.
More open, yes. So do you think that's true? I mean, is it easier, do you think, to get roles now as an Asian American actor?
No. It's getting there.
It's easier, but doesn't mean it's easy.
Yes, it's not easy. I mean, you can get roles.
You can, yes.
Yes. But, you know, it's not so much that people are knocking on the door saying, oh, here's 10 different scripts for you.
No, and I mean, if people talk about it, they go to their agents, and the pile for the white men is 2 to 3 times as high as anyone else's pile.
Mm-hmm. And that's true for any female actor or actress. Mm-hmm. But I think especially for Asian Americans, it's going to take still a bit more time. I mean, 10 years ago, you know, there may have been roles. 20 years ago, definitely not. Mm-hmm. And now, hopefully, there are people writing roles that can be any color.
Exactly.
You know, yes. I mean, obviously we, you know, have broken that color barrier with Shakespeare because mm-hmm. there's, you know, colorblind casting and that kind of thing. But so what are you up to next after these roles here in Portland?
I'll go back to New York and, you know, I've gotten a few phone calls and so hopefully something will pan out when I get back.
How about you, Kayla?
I'm actually going to make a trip out to China with my family to visit for the first time. So I'm very excited
about that. Where in China?
Probably Shanghai, that's where my grandparents grew up, and probably a couple other places in Hong Kong, probably. And then I'll be back in New York doing the audition stuff again.
So how's your Chinese?
My Chinese is actually pretty good, yeah? I must say. I can speak it fairly well. I don't read or write, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah, that's too hard.
It's very, very hard, but my Chinese is okay.
Well, that's exciting. That's exciting to go with your parents there.
Oh, very much so. Your first time? My first time.
Yeah.
It'll be nice to see where my grandparents grew up and whatnot and where my dad was from and stuff like that.
Eye-opening experience.
Definitely.
Well, I'm thinking of you. That sounds like a wonderful trip to do. And I'm thinking of you in New York and pounding the pavement and saying, get those darn rolls. Good for you guys. Get those darn rolls. So the production of The Intelligent Design of Jenny Chow at Portland Center Stage runs through March 5th in downtown Portland. For ticket information, you can call the Portland Center Stage box office at 503-274-6588 or go to pcs.org. This production is not to be missed. That's my recommendation. Soo Jin Kim and Kay Ling Chung, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And next up, we present conceptual artist Damali Ayo's Living Flag, a street performance to bring awareness to African-American reparations. This is Stage and Studio.
Thank you.
is Stage and Studio. I'm Demay Roberts. Exploring the issues surrounding race, class, and gender is at the heart of the work of artist Amali Ayo. As a conceptual artist, she uses visual art, the web, performance, and audio to generate experience and dialogue for her audience. In her street performance called Living Flag, she collected reparations for the enslavement of African Americans by taking it to the streets as a panhandler. There, she accepts reparation payments, or she did anyway, from white people and distributed them to black people. Her stage was a busy street corner anywhere in the U.S., and we did a piece together about it. It's called Living Flag.
It's kind of a do-it-yourself approach. You guys want to pay some reparations today? Do you want to pay some reparations?
I'm assuming slavery of some sort.
Do you have anything to explain slavery?
I have to explain slavery?
It's a payment for the work of my great-great-grandfather who was enslaved by people related to you. I'll write your receipt.
Panhandling is a vulnerable and risky act. When I see a panhandler, I wonder, what is it like to realize it has come to this? To place your body on a street corner and ask for money. When I think of the issue of reparations for slavery in this country, I think black people are in a similar position to the panhandler. It has come to this. Every time I see a black person living on the street, I think about slavery. I think about a country where so many black people are on the street, in poverty, and in prison. I think about reparations.
I'm a little not ready. Just got myself a nice hot tea, and I'm going to look for a spot to sit.
I look for a spot with a lot of foot traffic. I give money to other panhandlers and make sure I don't interfere with their work.
I do not know where to sit. I don't see any other panhandlers. Big American flag ahead. I should probably sit right under that.
Sometimes I tape an American flag over my mouth. I become a living flag, staking my claim to this country.
I don't know if I have this in me right now.
I sit down, get out my can.
All right, I can do this.
I wear a sign around my neck that says 200 plus years of slavery in the United States. I place a sign in front of my can that says reparations accepted here.
Pay some reparations today? Very simple. I'll write you a receipt. Oh, thank you. Would you like a receipt?
I don't need a receipt. Thank you.
Okay, you have a good day.
So far, I've panhandled in Portland, Chicago, New York, and Boston.
Would you guys like to pay some reparations today?
A body on the street is not invisible. But there's a moment when we choose to honor or ignore that person. We look past people on the street, much as we ignore and dismiss aspects of history. When I panhandle for reparations, every person who passes me gets the chance to honor or ignore that history.
So $5, William.
I don't, okay, I see what you're doing.
Yeah, just you can send this to the IRS and you can write it off on your taxes.
Okay, well, by God.
$5 on October 29th.
Many black people I met while panhandling told me they have given up on the idea of reparations. Few believe that white people would even admit that they benefit from slavery.
I think it's a foregone concept that will never come to fruition. I don't know how much difference it would actually make. I think it would be more of a gesture of goodwill. But I think just for your mental state, I think it would make a difference to African Americans that the government acknowledged it and is trying to do something. I think that would make a difference.
And cash? There you go. Thanks. Would you like a receipt?
Sure.
Okay. Did you give me 20 cents?
I, being an American, unfortunately have to admit that we are still a racist country, and we know that minorities do not get a fair shake in this country, and it's time that we did something about it. And the blacks always get the short end of the stick, so I'm all for reparations.
How you doing?
How you doing?
Good. You know about reparations?
Yeah.
What do you think about it?
I think it's good, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Really? Here. I'll make it happen for you right now. No, I'm paying black people for their reparations. Some white person gave this to me, so I'm giving it to you.
So today I gave away $3 to other African Americans, and it was really exciting for them to get their first reparations payment from me. I like that.
Collecting from white people payments for black people. What do you think of that? Do you want one? Come here. Come here. There's your first reparations payment for slavery. Yeah. I'm giving money to you, yeah.
What's the catch?
There's no catch.
Yeah, there's always a catch.
Your ancestors worked hard for that. You should get some money. Well, I'm collecting some reparations payments, and here, I can make a payment to you.
What?
For the work of our ancestors. No, but that's what I'm doing. I'm collecting it from white people, and I'm giving it to black people. There you go. What do you think of that?
Yeah. What's to do with mine?
I would put it in an account that bears interest.
Good idea, too.
I'm just getting the work done, you know what I mean? Getting the job done. Don't spend it all in one place.
Panhandling is not big business. Most people who paid gave a dollar or whatever change they had in their pocket. Every day I do it, I am so humbled, so thankful I don't have to pay for my meals this way. My first day in Portland, I made $16.32. In each city after that, I made between $10 and $15. After four cities, I collected and reallocated about $75 in reparations.
I'm collecting reparations.
Give some of my money back.
You don't have to pay.
I don't have any black power.
There you go.
What?
Slavery.
Oh.
No, it's a reparation. Look, this Zachary here made the payment to me, and I'm giving it to you.
Thank you.
From a white American to a black American.
When I sit on the street, my head is right at the level where people carry a shopping bag. Most of those shoppers didn't stop to pay. In Boston and New York, two people volunteered to help me collect reparations. In Chicago, people walked past me and then complained to their companions. In Portland, no one accepted a receipt. The harshest verbal attacks happened in the town where I live.
Did you all want to pay some reparations today? Reparations? You can pay right here. Very simple. You guys want to pay some reparations today? Or you could shop?
This can be a risky performance. I don't know how people will react. White people can get really angry. My first day, a woman screamed at me that I was uneducated. Another man told me I wasn't living in reality. All that white rage can be a lot to handle.
If you want reparations or you want something to do with slavery, don't sit on the side of the street and bum money. Very dumb.
She and her group should, you know, go to work to better themselves as opposed to trying to get reparations for past deeds to their people.
I know they were mistreated and maybe they deserve something, but to sit there and beg for it on the street corner, I'm not too classy.
I don't think it's my personal responsibility to repair people for things that were inflicted upon them a couple of centuries ago.
How can you fix that injustice? You can't with money or anything else.
It's a completely irresponsible idea. We corrected the wrongs as we went along. It's un-American, it's unconstitutional, and it's dead wrong.
You want to pay some reparations?
People always ask me if my work has a sense of hope. I respond that I'm just engaging reality, offering real chances for dialogue. One of these moments happened in Harlem. A black man complained to me about white people and their lack of respect. Then a white woman came up and paid $2 in reparations. He was shocked.
That's the first time I've actually heard somebody say that.
It's true, though.
He said he'd never heard a white person care about black people. He continued to listen, and eventually he asked her for a hug. The two embraced as I watched from the sidewalk below.
Who says we can't all get along?
Do you all want to pay some reparations today? Collecting reparations, you can pay right here. You want to pay some reparations? Hey, folks, it's time to pay some reparations. You can pay right here. Do you want to pay some reparations today?
That was Living Flag by Damali Ayo. Damali has written a book called How to Rent a Negro, a hilarious and satirical look at race relations that's almost too close for comfort. It's definitely a tongue-in-cheek book. How to Rent a Negro is written to spark dialogue about race and divisions and connections. To find out more about Damali or her book, visit rent-a-negro.com. Before we go today, there's a benefit for Sisters in Action for Power. It's a reading of the Vagina Monologues this Saturday at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. at Legacy Emanuel Hospital. Tickets are $15 for general admission and $7.50 for students and seniors. And it's in the Lorenzen Room, of Legacy Emmanuel Hospital. That's L-O-R-E-N-Z-E-N, I believe. And it's a worthy cause and a fun play. If you haven't seen the Vagina Monologues, now's the time. That's it for Stage and Studio this week. Next week, we present a special broadcast of Our Fathers Who Aren't in Heaven, a poignant story about an African-American father and son. Till next time, I'm Dee Mae Roberts.
Between the Covers has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from St. John's Books, North Portland's full-service independent bookstore, offering new and used books on progressive politics, literature, poetry, titles for kids, and more. St. John's Books is located at 8622 North Lombard in St. John's. Information at 503-283-0032. Stage and Studio has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Children's Theater presenting the world premiere of The Giver, the story of a boy learning of the tragic sacrifices his community has made for safety and security. The Giver runs March 5th, 11th, and 12th, 2 p.m. at Keller Auditorium, 222 Southwest Clay. Tickets at 503-228-9571 or Ticketmaster.com. Appropriate for ages 10 and up. Information about The Giver at octc.org.